Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, yields and forward rates. I will quit talking at about 2:40 so that you can take the quiz, and when you're finished with the quiz, that will be all I have for you for today. In the interim, I'm going to dig up something here if I can possibly, I don't have two monitors to do this with, so let me just begin with a quick look at the markets. And as you can see, we had a bear day. It's been a bear day. Nothing spectacularly bearish, but it definitely is not one of those happy days on the street. Nothing dramatic, though. As you can see, this is noticeable. The Dow is down about 0.41%, and the S&P 500 is down a little less, which is a little odd. But it's down 0.37%. And then the NASDAQ is down the same amount, about 0.37%. And so when you have all of those numbers in the same direction, red in this case, that's a good sign that it is definitely, there's bearish sentiment. It's not any large bearish sentiment, but it is not a good day on the street. Just a little bit on the sour side. But as far as you can see here, the VIX was calming down, and then it spiked the volatility. VIX is the volatility of the market, and there was a spike in volatility, and then it calmed down a little bit a while ago. But it's still a little bit on the edgy side there. The whole market is. On the other side of the world, this is getting to be kind of an interesting thing. You had the Nikkei was down. This is late last night for us, but during their day, the Nikkei was down, but it climbed back up. The one that's noticeable is the Hang Seng. It had been in negative territory, very bearish there for a number of days, but there's generally positive sentiment in for the Chinese, because they are sopping up all of the lost business that we are throwing away now, and so that just increases their power in the world economy, increases the value of their assets, the value of their stocks and their companies, and generally points to a world that is going to be more and more dominated by China and by other countries that are allied with China. Then, and of course, the United States is sort of isolating itself off from the world, which ultimately is to the benefit of those countries that are not that are able to do without us. China is quite capable of doing all, taking care of itself, and finding trade partners to deliver the things that we cannot provide for it. So that's the good news. That's the bad news there. Now let me get this down here. Go ahead. Right now we're still sitting on, as you notice, gasoline prices are finally slipping a little bit, as I said and noted on Monday, because of these incredibly cheap oil prices that are out there now. That'll be good for consumers and businesses that need fossil fuels to run their operations. It's actually not a good thing for green energy initiatives, because higher prices for fossil fuels, hydrocarbon-related fuels, is actually, we want oil prices high if we want those other alternatives to be attractive, because at low prices for oil, you're not going to put the money into those green energy projects like wind turbines, geotherm, solar. It's just not going to be worth your while to do those kinds of things. So we really, this is actually not a good thing in a way, because with that low oil, those oil prices, it's, there's not as much incentive to move toward post-fossil fuel energy generation for the world. So that's one of the downside. Another downside of these cheap oil prices. And even to the extent that when you get the typical consumer sees prices of gasoline that are low, they don't think as much about getting a hybrid or an electric vehicle. If gasoline prices are high, well, you do see a spike in demand for hybrids and electric vehicles and other types of vehicles. There are even liquid natural gas vehicles and several other technologies. So, you know, not the greatest thing in the world in the long run for oil prices to be the way they are. Here, the yield on 10-year bonds. In this lecture, I talk more about yields. But a yield is essentially an interest rate. And a 10-year treasury bond, or technically that's a 10-year treasury note, that's kind of like the benchmark that we kind of watch. We do watch other interest rates, and I'm going to bring up some other interest rates here over the next hour or so that we kind of keep an eye on. But this is one of those that we're kind of interested in. I'm looking here. You know, it's funny because the one that I talked about, the risk-free rate, the proxy for that is a one-year treasury bill. And of all the of all the ones that they list here, they don't have the one-year treasury bill. Okay, one way or the other. That's kind of the one that we like to say, well, that's kind of pretty close to the risk-free rate, that R sub F that I wrote on Monday. Well, that's neither here nor there for what I'm about to say here. The 10-year bond, it's sort of sitting there. We'd love to see it get below 4%, kind of like a psychological barrier. If it gets below that, then we see that other interest rates that track with the 10-year bond are going to be getting lower too, and getting lower in a noticeable way. If that happens, that is, interest rates going down obviously stimulates the economy. And so right now, they're not terribly high, 3.147 something percent there. That's not a terribly high interest rate, but it's not really enough to juice the economy. Not that we really want to juice the economy, because we're still having inflation expectations, and if the Fed fuels the economy by pouring money in, driving interest rates down, well, that's going to cause inflation, and we're already still battling inflation expectations, and you probably see it in your consumption, your rent. They're still going up, and that's based on expectations that inflation is going to keep being a problem. Once we can wring that out of the economy, you won't see prices going up, because expectations will calm down. But unfortunately, we may be going in the wrong direction if the Fed is pressured into dropping interest rates significantly. It's a complicated dance here, but something I wanted to show you here just for one thing that let me show you real quick here. Well, not really. I do want to show you this. You might have seen these. I kind of have ignored it. They have different names for this. The one that I hear kind of frequently, it's called a sector map. And all it does is show the markets by different sectors: technology, financial services, healthcare, industrial, that kind of stuff. And it shows their relative sizes. And if they're red, that sector has had a bear day. If it's green, that sector has had a bad day, good day. As you can see, there are more reds than greens today. So more sectors are in bearish territory today than they are in bullish territory. And notice the technology sector is big. It is, I, Yeah, it is the biggest of all of them. Financial services, healthcare, there are some that are fairly large. Notice that most all of the bullish sectors, except for consumer, I'm a little surprised by that. Give me a second here. Let me look at that more closely. Yeah, consumer cyclicals. Yeah, okay. That seems to be on the upswing today. But overall, this is not something that is really intense that I would expect to test you on in some major way. It's just a visual layout of how the market by sector has performed on a given day. And it also, of course, shows you the relative sizes of those sectors. So technology sector is down. It's a huge sector, so that probably is one of the biggest reasons that the whole markets are in a bad mood today, is because the biggest sector in the markets is in having a bad day today. It's just something to have a look at, keep an eye on just a little bit, and sort of points you in the direction of where the bulls are clustering and where the bears are clustering on any given day. Now, on a bullish day, you'd see more greens and fewer reds, almost. Well, I shouldn't say this, but it's all very rare to see all green or all red on any given day. But it also, by looking at this, you can see where the impact of bull and bear sentiment is on a given day. Now, I want to show you a couple of really quick things here. I'm going to pull up a couple of different sectors. Let me look at financial services to begin with, and I will look at SYN. That's Synchrony. I hope that's Synchrony. Is that Synchrony? I think Synchrony is, no, SYF is Synchrony. So this would take us into the financial services sector. Synchrony is a large and growing financial services company. Synchrony deals with Amazon's credit. Synchrony is also with such other offerings as Care Credit. Synchrony is also, I'm trying to think what else Synchrony is doing right now, but they are a large company. And as you can see, as the financial services sector, it's down for the day, and whither goes the sector, Synchrony is going to follow. Notice that this is true of a number of companies in the financial services sector. The beta is high. This is a risky sector. It's very interest rate sensitive, of course. It's also very sensitive, somewhat sensitive, I should say, to the boom-bust cycle of the economy and all of that. But as you can see, this company is actually, am I seeing that? Yeah, it's undervalued. Look at this company, though. These tend to be very profitable, these companies do, financial services, because they're taking money hand over fist. I mean, they are heavily criticized for some of the ways that they make a lot of their profit. One thing that was quite dramatic over the past few years is how they will extend credit. They will let you go into red on your debit account, and then they'll just sock you with fee after fee after fee. And that turns out to be one of their biggest profit centers in this sector, is taking advantage of people who are in bad situations. Is that ethical? Well, that's not kind of relevant to what I'm doing here, but it is profitable. And so you have that kind of something there. Now, let me take you one into the technology sector. And I'm not sure if I'm going to get the ticker symbol right on this. SYY. Yep, Cisco. Cisco is actually a mega corporation. It is one of those corporations, you don't say, well, where's the Cisco building? You say, where's the Cisco campus? It is vast. I've been there. It's quite impressive. I wasn't there long before they found out, before security caught me. But anyway, interestingly, you would expect a technology company to have a high beta. This one is so large, it's almost in that too big to fail category. They have their hands in so many different aspects of high technology that it's ridiculous. I mean, everything they do is technology, and companies, corporations heavily depend on them for many of their technology needs. So you have one here. It's somewhat undervalued, probably low beta, profitable, and it pays a nice dividend. So that's the kind of company that is, if you want to invest in the technology sector, but you don't want to take much risk, companies like Cisco are the way that you would want to look. You would want to go. And now, just a walk on the wild side here. Transportation. And we'll look at UAL. Now notice that is down pretty heavy today. And that is the whole airline industry, it can be a pretty risky place to throw money. I'll show you another one here in a minute. But there's UAL. High beta. It is profitable. Somewhat undervalued, it looks like, but they don't pay a dividend. So you have to depend only on stock price appreciation to get money out that you have invested in. So that's something to keep in mind when you take on these kinds of companies. Now I want to show you one more in this sector. We'll do AA. AAL. Yeah. AAL. American Airlines. Notice that beta again. This is something that you may begin to appreciate if you look at sector stocks, that a lot of them seem to have similar betas. And in this case, again, it's somewhat undervalued, it looks like. It's a profitable company. But there again, look at that, no dividend. So you begin to see these patterns of different industries, okay? We see that high tech, maybe lower betas, they pay dividends, the mature, older companies, too big to fail almost, but then you get into, you're interested in airlines, okay? I'm interested in airlines, that means that I am going to face high betas, no dividends, but possibly undervalued right now. And I'm just pointing this out to you, just run through a few, and I'll do this on on days in the future where I'll just show you, okay, let's look at a couple of companies in this sector, and let's look at a couple of companies in this sector. Next time I'll do healthcare as one of them, and then something else, some other sector. And then you begin to get the sense that there are these patterns that seem to, or the companies all are seem to look very similar in terms of some of their numbers. Let me take this off the board. I'm going to, let me do something here real quick. I should run over here and have a look to see what I've got as far as spreadsheets go on this. First things first, let me see if we've got anything in your files that would be useful to you for this exercise. One thing I want to do definitely is I want to pull up Excel here for one thing that we'll do here. I'm going to use this sheet, but let me look for something else in here that might be of help to you. Files. One thing that I want to show you, spreadsheets. Let me look down here real quick, see if I can find something. Oh, this isn't good. I didn't know they were doing that now. This isn't helping me one little bit here. I may not be able to find it, in which case I probably won't even cover it, although the book does do something with it. That's odd. Oh, I know what's wrong here. I'm screwing up here. I forgot that this is bringing up the leave student view. Let me go here to the dashboard. I'll show you something if I can find it here. Files. There we go. That's what I was looking for. See if I have a file for you. And I'm not sure I will have one for this. Nope. I don't have one for this exactly, so I probably won't. One way or the other, the one subject that I was going to do today, it's in the book, and it's some pretty deep math. And I do have a spreadsheet to handle it, but I'm somewhat reticent to even let you use it because I'm not going to test you on it. But let me start with a very simple problem here. It has to do with bonds and other debt instruments. I told you earlier that we can divvy up debt instruments into bills, notes, and bonds. Bills are very short-term debt. If the U.S. Treasury wants to borrow money for less than a year, it will borrow on a bill. It will issue a one-year bill, which means that in 1 year it will pay you back. And then if it wants to borrow between 1 year and, let's say, 10, 15 years, it would issue you a note. And at the end of the term, the time of the bond, it would pay you back what you with interest. And then bonds are very long haul, 20, 30, maybe even 50 year. Again, you buy the bond, and then they'll pay you interest payments along the way, and then at the end they'll pay you one last interest payment, and then they'll give you back the money you lent them. That's how corporate debt works. Now, most of these guys right here, the way they work is that you will lend in $1,000 increments. That's why we always use $1,000 as the baseline. You lend them $1,000. This applies to notes and bonds. You lend the government $1,000. In other words, you buy a bond, let's say. And then, let's say it's a 20-year bond. And let's say that it has a coupon interest rate of 6%. So for 20 years, every year, you'll get an interest check. And then at the end of that time, you will get one last interest check, and you'll get $1,000 back. That's how corporate debt works. That's how government debt works. When for consumers, we get a payment calculated that pays interest and also pays down what you owe. And we'll get into that next week in more detail. But bills don't work that way. Bills are a type, and this is true of a lot of short-term debt. These two pay coupons, which are interest payments. This one, these things are called discount paper because a treasury bill, let's say it's a one-year treasury bill, and you buy it from the government. That's how much you're lending the government. In 1 year, the government gives you $1,000 back. So you're going to buy it at something less than $1,000, a discount to par. And then in a year, you get $1,000. So the difference between what you bought it at and your $1,000 payment at the end is your interest. That and government debt isn't the only one. Corporate, short-term corporate debt is almost always discount paper, too. It's almost always. So let me show you how it works here. I'm going to start with, treasury auction. Now, back in the old days, now it's all electronic, but back a long, long, long time ago, the government would simply, to borrow money, it would simply put out paper on a table. And then high-powered investors would come to the table and they'd, well, I want to buy this one right here. And then there would be some price that would be a bidding process. Well, I want it too. And so you might have a bidding process on it. But whoever got it at the end was going to get $1,000 in a year. Let's say it's totally a treasury bill auction. So the first thing that I would want to do on a treasury auction is, there would be a price at which someone would get that bond. And from that price, we would also want to say, okay, what is the face value of that bond, the future value? It will always be $1,000. No matter what anything else does, you remember that. It's always $1,000 you get at the end. Or some increment, you know, if you buy more. But we always have a benchmark of $1,000. Okay. So then, based upon the price and what you get at the end, we can get an interest payment. And we can take the interest divided by the investment, and we get the percent yield. I'll show you how it works. You, sir, you decide that you are going to go to your first treasury bill auction. Now, I am the treasury bill hostess. Well, look at you. I've never seen you here before. Are you here to buy a nice treasury bill? You darn straight you are. You are an intelligent young man, and my God, you're gorgeous. So you go up to the table, and there are these treasury bills, one-year treasury bills. And there's other people looking at this too, this treasury bill. And you kind of muscle your way in, and someone says, well, you know, there's a lot of activity. So, you know, you're not going to get a great deal on it, because there are others who would offer more for it to me. But, you know, I think you're a nice guy. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, okay, you win. You say you bid $975, and I say, sold. You look really excited, and so I yell back to the bag guy, Earl, one T-bill, $975. And Earl gives you your... So you walk out, and then in exactly a year, you get a check in the mail for $1,000. That's all there is to it. And yes, you can do this too. So the interest that you earned... You bought it for $975. It ended at $1,000. So the interest you earn is $25. Now here's the part you got to watch out for: the yield. Because you earned $25 on $975. That's where the mistake happens. Don't put $1,000 down there in the denominator. That's not what you invested. You invested $975, and on that you earned $25. So if I were to work that out on a calculator, where the heck is my calculator? There it is. I would do $975. Well, no, I would do $25 divided by $975. And I turned that into a decimal by timesing it by 100. So you earned a yield, a one-year yield of 2.56%. You earned a yield of 2.5. Just take the amount of interest you earned divided by what you invested. That's all you ever do for this. It's so simple that I don't even make a spreadsheet for it. And I will do one of these, not on this quiz, but you will see one maybe on quiz 4, and you'll see one on the midterm exam. And it's really simple to do. But it is something useful. But there's something now. Exactly a year later, you show back up at a treasury auction. And, well, there you are again. Isn't that nice? My goodness, I have a daughter. Are you married? And you got your $1,000, didn't you? So you're back again. And so I say, here are these bonds. Would you like to pay $975 for one now? And you say, now, wait a minute, fat woman. I don't see anyone around here. No one's bidding for these. Well, yes, I suppose so. So you're going to say, you know what? I think you could probably get me to buy one for $950. Do you see how there's not as much bidding activity, so the price settles down a little bit? That's important to remember politically. Well, it's going to pay you $1,000 in a year. So this time, you are going to make interest of $50 on an investment of $950. So let's try that yield this time. You earn 50 on, divided by, 950. Whoops, try that again. 50 divided by 950. And then I say, let's times that by 100 to get it into a percent. 5.26%. Now here is where you see a fundamental principle of finance. It is just a mathematical phenomenon. What is happening, sir, to the yield on a debt instrument as its price goes down? What's happening to the yield? As a price of a debt instrument goes down, what happens to the yield?
It goes up.
Bingo. One of the most fundamental principles of finance is that as prices go down, yields go up. That's crucial to all of the mechanics. And it's just a purely a mathematical phenomenon. And it doesn't matter whether it's the simplest one-year T-bill in the world or the most complex debt instrument you could imagine. Price and yield are inversely related. Now, notice that's kind of an interesting thing, because we are now having a harder and harder time getting the heavy investors to come to the auctions. They don't want to come to buy to lend our government money anymore. They're sick of us. And so as that happens, and the numbers are pretty scary right now, we are going to have to sell at lower and lower prices to induce investors to come to the table. By the way, who is at those auctions? You were, but you're odd. You know who is at those auctions buying that paper that is lending us money? Because that's how it works. We sell this paper, and that is how we are borrowing money. Who comes to those auctions? The Chinese, because they have trillions of our dollars. The Japanese, the Canadians, the Europeans. The Australians, they are the ones who come to those auctions. When they don't come to those auctions, we have to keep lowering the prices to get someone, anyone, to buy our paper. That is the consequence of a global economy and the great dependence we have on debt because we can't pay our bills because the tax revenues are insufficient for the vast complexity of our expenditures at the federal level. So there you go. That's the backdrop of why this is not just some simple arithmetic problem. And I'll make it, it will be a simple arithmetic problem on a quiz or an exam. But now you're seeing what's going on in the moving parts behind the scene. Now, a couple of things that I want you to do here is I want you to get, let me get the attendance radar fired up. And then from there, here you go. Go ahead and fire up your attendance radar, and then I will be writing the password for the quiz on the board, and then that's all I will have for you. When you're finished with the quiz, you can definitely go home. And I thank you.